I'm a bright figure.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to read.
Oh. So if I write here?
Yeah.
Just bigger.
Just bigger.
Just bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this?
That's a good size.
Okay.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, yeah, for the rest of it.
Okay, more concretely, I'm going to talk about some mechanism, some physical mechanism, which is responsible for the present value of dark energy.
But is it cosmological constant problem or coincidence problem?
Well...
You have coincidence there and constant here.
Oh, okay, so coincidence problem.
It's just going to make sure. That side you're
going to
solve coincidence,
yeah.
And this side you're going to
okay. So I'm going to talk about some mechanism which is responsible for the present value. Of the dark energy. Okay, and this is the work I have been doing in collaboration with these folks here. Okay, the model I'm going to consider is a single scalar field coupled non-minimally with gravity. So the Lagrangian density can be written in the following form. And functions of scalar field phi, such as chi, k, and v, will be chosen later. I'm just telling you this Lagrangian because you'd like to know in what context I'm discussing this problem. Okay, so this contains non-minimal interaction term, which is important. Okay, so let me briefly remind you what the...
So is there anything explicit to keep k there? Because are you going to absorb into the definition of phi?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right.
Okay,
I just write it in this way. Okay. So let me briefly remind you what the problem is, actually, what the cosmological coincidence problem is, although it will... Everybody will know that. Okay, so according to general relativity, the second derivative of scale factor is determined by the energy density by the term on the right-hand side. So the positive acceleration is possible only if p is less than one-third of rho, so that is the rho in particular. Since p is greater than zero, since p is positive for normal type of matter, acceleration is possible only if you have a matter which is has negative pressure. So you know all this, right? So for normal matter, in positive acceleration is possible only if there is some component of matter which has negative pressure. So if such component is mixed with normal matter, assuming that P has a simple linear relations with rho, this condition actually implies that energy density falls up more slowly than 1 over a squared. So if that kind of matter is mixed with normal matter, such as radiation or baryons, etc., then because they fall much faster than this kind of matter, eventually, even though it started with a small value, it will eventually dominate the energy content of the universe, right? So that we'll have acceleration. Okay, observation tells us a number of things. First of all, our universe is is indeed accelerating, and secondly, the transition from deceleration to acceleration started recently, only recently. And the current value of the dark energy, which is necessary, is about 3 times current value of the matter energy density. And this D0 has been almost constant until since some time in the recent past, right?
Isn't the definition of recently and recent past kind of dependent on the iteration of time,
recent past means 5, 10, or right. something like
but
that.
That's like, you know,
right.
Like 9/10 of the age of the universe.
Yeah, when the size of the universe was 5 times smaller or 10 times smaller.
Yeah, like
it's not.
Redshift 5 to today is like 10 billion years.
Right, right.
And the universe is only 14 billion years old. So
right.
it's not recent if you use, like, you know, physical time.
Right.
It's only recent if
right,
you
right.
use this odd coordinate
of
redshift.
Right, I'm talking about in terms of redshift or size of the universe. In comparison to the present size of the universe. So it's not in terms of the time scale. Okay, so there are a few candidates for this dark energy, which is cosmological constant, and another candidate is quintessence. Is there a... clock here or something?
What do you
want? Oh, okay. So, it's so similar. I mean, it's the same questions, but these are very slowly or constant, you know, energy density. And I'm trying to compare this fast falling matter energy density. And the question is why we are living very close to the, you know, the point where these curves cross each other. Yeah, again, I'm using, you know, this Z or the size of the universe in this scale. So question is why this dark energy density, it becomes same as the matter energy density. Oh, this is cosmological redshift. It's roughly.
Yeah, no, but what is? No, I understand that. But you're saying that it was important redshift of 5, the dark energy?
No, it's order of 10. Something like that. I don't.
That's when we know.
You know, this is actually.
No, but that's much lower than that. It's like.
Why? You think? Yeah,
think
it's lower than
1,
it's really lower than 10.
Yeah. Less than 10.
Yeah, less than 10.
Okay. No, because just we don't really know much about dark energy.
Yeah, right.
It could have changed quite a bit.
Yeah, it's. I think it is based on the this sim numerical simulation of a large scale structure. So definitely. That's.
I think the supernova observations they.
That's only up to.
I think it is that 1 or so, and I mean
right,
everything else, if you put them together, I think the constant part is, I mean, if anything, there is evidence that it's not constant, but then it is very, very weak evidence.
So I think as far as we can go is about this much, right?
Sure, but I think it's less than that.
Yeah, definitely less than that, right. Okay. But this one is based on the numerical simulation after galaxies are formed, which is definitely smaller than Z equal 10. And then starting from galaxies, you try to simulate the largest scale structure of the galaxies. So.
I think Nina should just say that it really only kind of made the sense about redshift of 1, and we only have really evidence that it's constant.
Right. Direct evidence comes from the.
It's
less than 1. Or less than 1, yes.
One,
right.
So given that units of time and redshift, I mean, you can choose whatever you want for the units. So I think that's not necessarily the important question. Isn't the more fundamental question that you're trying to answer is why do those curves cross at all?
That's right.
So then wouldn't you need quantum gravity to explain that?
Not really. I'm trying to explain. I'm trying to explain the origin of the dark energy phenomenologically, not from the fundamental physics.
Yes, they'll always cross. So
they always cross because they have different rate of fall.
Yes. So I guess isn't it kind of a moot question then? That's why they cross now? Isn't that kind of a
right? That's the question actually. Why they cross right now?
The question is why do they cross just at the right time?
Right.
But wouldn't that depend on the initial conditions?
Right. That's right.
Hence quantum gravity.
I think you could say that about anything.
So then what's the point then of the talk, I guess, is my question. Isn't it kind of a...
Well, people try to, you know, reproduce this result. Actually, this matter density at the present time is roughly 10 to the minus 120 in Planck unit, which is very, very tiny number. So if you try to explain this in terms of cosmological constant, mm-hmm. then since it is constant all the time, the value should be true even in the Planck era. But at that time, quantum fluctuation is order one, so it is really difficult to understand why all the contributions, you know, sum up to minus 120.
So what you're really trying to look at then is a cosmological constant problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Right, not this one. But quintessence has the same problem.
Right.
Right, because, you know, it get rid of this problem with the smallness at the Planck era, but why this thing crosses this curve right now, okay? That depends on the initial condition, as you said, and the parameters of the potential, for example. So what is the really physically natural mechanism?
I think it's quantum gravity.
Oh, right, right.
No, but quantum gravity is not a theory, but I guess presumably this is a theory, it's predictive.
Okay.
So why do you wait for the full theory of quantum gravity?
But anyway, this is a question I'm trying to answer.
Yeah.
Why does dark energy happen to have this very tiny number right now? Okay. And one obvious thing is that quintessence doesn't answer this kind of questions. It makes small, because usually in quintessence, for example, if you consider this exponential potential, which is typical choice of potential, then, for example, if you consider a potential of this form, then at the late stages, the slope becomes very, very flat, I mean small, the potential becomes flat, and then this value of the potential goes to zero indefinitely. So if you wait long time, then it's natural that cosmological constant is small. But it doesn't ever say why at the present time the value is, in other words, why this scalar field is passing this point where the value is minus 120. It never say that kind of things, right? It never answer that kind of questions.
The problem with exponential potential is it's not a constant. It actually scales like the density of the universe. So.
Oh, that depends on the value of alpha.
Well, okay, so I guess I don't remember. Because if it's very small, then it would remain a constant.
Right.
Then I guess that is.
Yeah, that's also a problem. I mean, the scalar energy density of the scalar field, if that follows the matter energy density, it never crosses, right? So you need to invent a method of crossing to stop this subtracting behavior or scaling behavior, right?
We
need to
go backward as well.
Mm. Oh. Okay, so if you consider non-minimal coupling, there is an interesting possibility. Okay, so to see that, let's go back to the Lagrangian density, which is I squared phi r k phi square minus phi phi. And of course, we need to add the Lagrangian density for ordinary matter. The dynamics of this phi field is understood more easily in the Einstein frame. So let's go to Einstein frame. So that's a conformal transformation from G minimum to chi And then Lagrangian density can be written like Einstein theory, but with some different k and potential. And also, you have dependence on chi here, right? Because you're scaling the metric, right? So you have this dependence here also.
This chi just, does it this, contain I for it?
This one here.
Is it just some function?
Phi. Yeah, it doesn't contain a derivative. I'm not considering derivative of phi. It's just the algebraic function of phi. Now, we can write the field equations starting from that Lagrangian density, assuming homogeneity and isotropy in flat. Then the field equation becomes, oh, I forgot to write down what this k is. And v becomes v phi over chi. So actually, even if you start with the canonical kinetic energy term where k is 1, after this conformal transformation, you get functional dependence. So that's why I didn't put any special meaning on the constant kinetic factor. Anyway, from this equation, if you derive the field equation, then becomes 3h squared, where this is a Hubble parameter, a of a dot of a, and 1/2 k e phi times phi dot squared, plus v e phi plus rho, which is the energy density of ordinary matter. And another relevant equation is this. This is the term I'm interested in. Okay. So if the theory does not have this factor chi, if this is 1, then this term vanishes because it contains chi prime, which is the derivative with respect to phi. So if chi is 1, then chi prime is 0, and this term vanishes. So this non-minimal coupling guarantees that there is a term of this type. Okay, that's important for my discussion. Okay, another thing to note is that this particular combination is just a trace of the stress energy tensor, T mu nu. And it vanishes for relativistic matter, such as radiation and not zero, for non-relativistic matter. Now think. So this evolution of phi depends on the evolution of the matter, right? Because of that term. But let's think how our matter evolved from the beginning. We know that radiation dropped like 1/8, right? And we also know that ordinary non-relativistic matter decays like 1/8, right? So it's decaying slower than this. And this crossing point is called matter dominance. From this point on, the matter dominates over radiation, right? And which is roughly 10^4 in terms of redshift. So here, we usually, when we consider this total energy density, we usually consider this matter energy density. And before this period, this becomes much bigger. The dominant part becomes radiation, right? But we're not considering rho total rho. We're considering rho minus 3p, right? So in this region, the dominant contribution on the right-hand side comes from this curve, right? This simply vanishes, drop out from that expression. And this non-relativistic matter becomes dominant component.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a good approximation, but I think
right.
Early
yeah,
on,
that's right.
If you compare that to the matter, it was down. And the tracing anomaly would be of order G with force.
Yeah, there is some you know mixture of it's not exactly it is really difficult to
but I think for a while prior to matter radiation
right. So my question is until when I can use this this curve. Because this relativistic thing drop out of the equation. So I like to find what is the dominant contribution to this term here.
Doesn't matter solve a different conservation equation now that it's not minimally coupled?
I think you're saying that conservation law becomes a little bit different.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the distinction between energy density and pressure in the Einstein frame and the original Jordan frame. But their difference depends on the factor of chi. And as I'll explain, I'm assuming that this chi is almost one.
But then there's no real difference between
there is not really difference between only in the very, very early stages there is a difference. But as far as we are observing the present time or even early time, chi remains to be one all the time. According to our model. I will try to explain that later. Anyway, so we need to extend this behavior back into time, back into the past. So my picture is that in the very early time, probably just after the insulation ended, a lot of relativistic matter were created, and that was the everything, almost everything was relativistic. So I think this continues quite to the quite early stages of the universe. But this matter, what was the behavior of this curve in the early time? That's the question. So I tried to approximate this curve in such a way that in the only period, everything was relativistic, but at certain time, the non-relativistic matter started to build up. Some of the relativistic matter became non-relativistic, so it starting from zero, it increased until it reaches the maximum, and then it drops like 1/8. So my question is, when exactly this period, when this happened? Especially I'm interested in the maximum value of this.
And that is that when you have relativistic particles that become non-relativistic, so like electron positrons that they become non-relativistic and then they annihilate. So
right.
And then they disappear. So then.
But electron.
So that's a different term.
Right now, this energy density is due to baryons mostly, right? Neutrons and protons, not electrons. Electrons can be neglected almost, right?
It's due to dark matter mostly.
Oh, yeah, right.
Okay.
Dark matter.
Right.
So I don't know exactly the nature of dark matter, but if you consider just a baryon, for example, the baryon is protons and neutrons. So until when I can use this formula 1/8? When they remained non-relativistic. Of course, those in the very early stages were relativistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at certain point, it became non-relativistic. What is the time?
Well, that depends on the dark matter. But I think that, like at the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis,
mm-hmm.
we know that. I mean, dark matter is a small contribution, it's like something like 10^-7, I guess, or 10^-6. But then electron positrons, for example, they just become non-relativistic. So there are where they're basically one.
Mm.
So that's much bigger than the effect of dark matter.
But at that time, those the electrons were relativistic, right? Yeah.
But they become relativistic at time because the temperature is about MeV.
Mm-hmm.
So they've just become relativistic. So
mm-hmm.
they are much more significant than dark matter at that point.
Oh, you were saying that this is dark. This is a total, actually, dark matter and...
Are there non-relativistic as well?
Yeah, there's all non-relativistic matter.
Right, so she's from all the G-star.
Yeah,
and solve the equation, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So you need a full model for
the different
G-star and
everything. Right, but that's
right.
Roughly a triton. So I'm assuming that, you know, this was between 10^-13 and 10^-10.
What is 10^-13?
It's a 12 or 13. It is, you know, just a nucleon. Matter, a nucleon mass was about the temperature.
This is Big Bang nucleosynthesis, is that BBN?
Huh?
Is this BBN?
This is the, you know, proton rest mass.
Okay.
You can calculate, you can convert that into temperature, and the temperature is just to inversely proportional to the redshift. So it's about this period. Or it can be, I don't know. Anyway, this behavior will be important in my calculation.
More board.
Oh, yeah. So, in this period where there was no non-relativistic matter at all, then the right-hand side vanishes, right? So the scalar field can stay at the point where this is zero, right? It can remain at the minimum potential, right? So I'm going to assume that in the beginning, probably after the inflation, phi remained at the minimum of the potential, stayed there still. And they can stay there still until some of the matter became non-relativistic. Then it starts to move, right? So drawing this potential as a function of phi, in the beginning, the scalar field stayed here. When this non-relativistic matter builds up, and then, because that term is behaving like a force, external force.
So what do you assume for chi?
Oh, well, I will explain that in a moment, but right now, let's assume that chi prime is not zero. Oh, yeah, minimum of, right here. Right. Oh, well, actually, my choice of V will determine where that minimum is, right? But right now, you can just neglect this vertical axis. And this is the point where V has minimum. Okay? So we can sit here in the early stage because radiation was dominant, or everything was radiation, or not relativistic, but that doesn't contribute to the behavior of phi. So only when this non-relativistic matter starts to build up, it acts like a force, external force, and this scalar field will start to move, right? So I'm trying to calculate what's the maximum value of phi, okay? And from this, I can try to calculate the potential energy of that scalar field. Okay? That's what I'm trying to do. Of course, that will depend, you know, for that purpose, I have to choose a particular model, right? So there is a certain motivations for choosing particular chi's and V potential. But since I'm running out of time, I'll just write down the result.
When the phi is at the minimum, it's being zero. Do I ignore the x-axis at all?
Oh.
So when phi is not moving, is it at the potential energy?
Oh, you're saying that the vertical axis is ignored? Right, is the value of phi?
So you said phi is not necessarily zero, but it is.
Oh, at this moment, it's just the minimum. I don't know where the minimum is. I'm just assuming that there is a potential has a minimum, and I don't know exactly where this minimum is because I didn't write down the potential. But so my choice of this non-minimal interaction term is phi squared minus twice alpha phi plus 1. And the choice of potential is quartic potential. Okay? So if I choose this potential in chi squared, then minimum of the potential is actually at phi equals 0. So Ve, which is this potential divided by chi fourth, this is V, has a minimum at 0. But if phi becomes large, very, very large, then this chi to the 4 contains a term which is quartic in phi, and this also has a quartic term, so it approaches 0, right? So something like this. It approaches to constant value. So if phi is really big, then it actually can generate all inflation, but I'm not discussing about that. I'm just looking at the behavior near the ground state. So as I told you initially, the field started was staying, sitting here at the bottom of the potential. And if the non-relative matter is generated, and it starts to move.
So why would it be at the minimum of the potential?
Oh, I'm simply assuming. Actually,
if you want to do inflation, then there is no reason for it to sit at that.
After spending all of its energy, the inflation field spend most of, almost all of its energy, and it stays quickly, settles to the minimum of the potential, I'm assuming.
Okay.
But then at the later stage, when non-relative field grows, it starts to move. Okay? So what is this maximum value? So for that purpose, I need to see the behavior of this phi. But I'm simply assume that this maximum is obtained when this potential gradient is exactly equal to the external force. Okay. So the balance is here at the maximum is obtained by equating this with chi prime over chi and rho matter, actually. Because for non-relative matter, I'm assuming that P is 0. Okay? This time will be denoted by subscript star. So, also, this actually, although I wrote this significantly deviated from the ground state, I'm assuming that this is very, very tiny effect, so that the approximation of chi is 1. The leading term of chi is 1. And the leading term of chi prime is, what is this? Minus 2 alpha? Oh, minus alpha. And but the leading term of potential is just 1. This? Okay, so this equation actually tells us that, lambda times phi star cube, okay, which is this, is equal to chi prime is minus alpha. Actually, the sign, I can take the only magnitude of this. Then chi prime is alpha in rho m, which is rho m star, right? But we know that this rho m is the current present value of rho m, rho, and a star a zero cube, right? Because it falls as one of a cube. So
what happened to cube?
That's cube, right? So from that equation, we can calculate the value of this potential energy, which is lambda I star fourth, right? So using this equation, you can easily show that this 1 over 4 times lambda and phi star is lambda over alpha over lambda to the 1/3, right? 4 and phi, rho m0 3/4, okay? And then it's a star of a zero to the fourth, right? Oh, here I'm assuming that Planck mass is 1. I'm setting the unit where Planck mass is 1. So, okay. So these are all, parameters, which I assume that for the time being, I'm assuming that it's the order 1. But we know definitely what this number is. This is 10 to the minus 120. So if you, no, it's the right. So if you know this quantity, we can evaluate the total energy density of the scalar field. Okay, so I'm comparing this with the present value of the matter. Then it becomes 1 of q lambda over alpha over lambda fourth times m0 1/3 and a0 over a star fourth. So plugging minus 120 gives for this factor minus 40, right? And if I plug in 10 to the 10 for this number, then this and this exactly cancels and we get order 1, right?
And now, so normally without the non-minimal coupling, that energy density would then decay as a to the minus 3, but the non-minimal coupling makes it stay constant. Is that the idea? No, so you just calculated the energy density right after the spike.
Right.
And normally then, if you had a 1/2 m squared, pi squared, potential,
right.
So you're going to say the
non-minimal
coupling.
Yeah, that's the second stage. I just want to show that the value of the scalar field potential energy produced at that time is roughly of order 1. It can be, if I use 10 to the 11th, then it becomes 1,000. And also, it depends on the choice of parameters, which is order, I assume it, this to be order 1, but it can be 110 or, can be controlled a little bit. But anyway, roughly, order of the present energy density is can be produced by this mechanism. Okay. So if this value actually obtained by this mechanism remains more or less constant, then we can understand the present value of the dark energy rate. Well, there is a little bit of problem here, actually, because but you can easily calculate the ratio between this 1/2 kinetic energy. Right. So does that make sense that, this value produced by this mechanism, if that remains more or less constant, then it can explain the present value of the dark energy, right?
Yes, that would be awesome.
Okay.
Well, don't you have to take into account what happens when you quantize the feed field, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you calculate its vacuum energy expectation value. So isn't that also going to give you an additional contribution to this 10 to the minus 20? So that isn't that something that is being neglected?
Oh, if you try to quantize the scalar field, actually, you know, it depends on the choice of the potential again. Because, but if I choose this quartic, right, but if I use this quartic potential, then mass of the scalar field is like almost zero, right?
Yeah, as you try to
fall,
it won't contribute anything to the system.
It's not.
Yeah, so isn't that the whole reason for the cosmological constant problem in the first place? That this vacuum energy density is goes all the way up to the Planck scale.
I think you're not really solving the cosmological, the old cosmological constant problem, which is what happened with the vacuum energy. And I think the reason you're not doing that is you're just putting this thing at that minimum and assume that minimum is
right. Right. Vacuum energy is assuming sum up to zero for some reason.
So that you're not, I think, it's, you're just solving like the last bit of it.
Right,
right. Mm-hmm. Assuming that some other thing solves
right.
The old cosmological problem.
And these are all phenomenological. Cannot be regarded as a fundamental aspect of the theory. I mean, fundamental F. It can reflect some fundamental aspects of the theory, but not claiming that.
Okay, so you're going to tell us why this remains constant.
Okay, so that is the end of my talk. Okay, so during, you know, after reaching this point, which corresponds to the maximum of the non-elastic matter, and then this decays fast, quite fast. It disappears from the point of a scalar field. What remains is a, you know, just a potential gradient pulling the scalar field back to the ground state, and also friction, right?
Hubble
friction. So in this process, I will assume that this potential gradient is balanced by the Hubble friction. So what is the equation? Oh. So the equation is K times 3 times H. This, oh, we cannot see this. Okay, let's write this. So, after reaching the maximum of the scalar field, that is going to, this is the Hubble term, right? So you get 3H times KE times phi dot is the Hubble friction term. And that is going to be balanced by the potential gradient, right? So this is the equation I'm assuming. Again, this term, neglecting this sign, this is cube, right? Now, using this equation, I can try to calculate the ratio of kinetic energy, which is 1/2 times Ke times phi dot squared to the potential energy. Fourth to the 5/4. If this ratio is very, very small, then potential energy is much bigger than the kinetic energy. Then we can guarantee that it changes very slowly, right? So the maximum number obtained this generating mechanism that remains almost constant, right? So I have to show that this is much more smaller than one for the rest of the history of the universe. Does that make sense? Okay, so what is the condition? So now using this thing, I can get rid of this phi dot, and the final result I get is k times phi squared 1 over. And lambda times 4 fourth times 3h squared. We know that this factor here has been small all the way until, because this is the total energy density, okay? And this is the only scalar of potential energy, so that until only recently, this term was much bigger than this one, right? This contains all the contributions from the matter field, which was much greater than this tiny value of scalar potential energy for the entire history of the universe, right? So this thing is much, much smaller. After this reaching the maximum value of the potential for this entire history, this number is much, much smaller than this one here. So if this factor is not too small, then that guarantees that this whole thing was much, much smaller than one. So this maximum value remained almost constant, right? But, this has quite some problem but if you choose, for example, this kinetic factor is 1 over phi squared, then it remains, it's just constant, right? So there is a way of making this fall slow. That's what I'm saying. But if you use this particular form, then it loses some of the initial motivations. But anyway, there is a method of making this fall very slowly by choosing appropriate vector, this kinetic vector. But anyway, the conclusion is that in this non-minimal coupling, in this model with non-minimal coupling, there is a definite mechanism where this vacuum energy is generated at some point of the history of the universe, and that remains more or less constant until present. And the value generated at this point actually explains this small number. Does that make sense? I skipped many things, but because I don't have time. But anyway.
This kind of, assuming that slow roll equation, that relies on, I guess, 3H KE
being
large relative to lambda.
Right. That's right. That's a total energy density.
Square root of pi.
This one here? The Einstein equation is.
I want to say that 3 times h times ke should be big relative to pi times the square root of lambda.
The equation for this Einstein equation is kinetic energy plus t potential energy of the scalar field times other meta field.
I just want to check. So the circled equation there.
Yeah.
No, I want to write that.
Yeah.
In order to assume that, you need something else to be satisfied, which is the 3 times h times kd.
Oh, you're trying to calculate this using this equation?
No. I want to say you can only assume that equation.
Oh, this equation.
Yeah, you can only assume that equation, right? If the coefficient on the left-hand side, 3hkd, is larger than 5 times the square root of lambda. I mean, that's like the overdamped regime of field of being overdamped.
Oh, okay. In this equation, I'm assuming that this.
So you're saying basically why you're going to find that
enough,
is that?
Yeah, what's the overdamped regime?
Right, so there's a finite enough
question what is forcing to
over. Oh, you mean you're asking why this I can ignore this acceleration term?
Yeah. Are we in the regime where
you're going to find that? Oh, well, actually, there is some work saying that this is comparable to this term. Yes, I have read some paper saying that this process, this is so comparable to a small fraction of this, or something like that. But it doesn't really change it, because if that is comparable, it only changed the coefficient here, and that will change slightly this number here.
Those two are almost cancel each other, then you don't need lambda 5 cubed.
So I think it matters a lot because you had this equation which is some kind of nonlinear version of a harmonic oscillator equation. Well, if that is in the underdamped regime, then the energy density will scale as a to the minus 4 in a 5 to the 4th dimension. If it's in the overdamped regime,
right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's crucial whether it is underdamped or overdamped.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's overdamping.
So that's what I'm saying. You can just check that. I'm just wondering whether it's the question is just is this with the numbers with the expressions that we have on the board? You can just check whether this is. Well, put me at peace.
Mm-hmm.
So, if this is true, then it's overdamped. Is that equation satisfied?
You got lambda 5 on the right hand side, right? You got 5 star here. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, here it is.
You can just check it.
So this guy we were saying is in the regime where it's about 1. KU is about 1?
Oh, well, I'm using actually K to be 1 over psi squared. So that is very, very large.
I thought in the derivation of this guy, didn't we use the K?
That doesn't
KU
need.
KU was approximately 1?
No, I just the.
Chi was approximately
1.
Oh,
chi was approximately 1.
So then you can take that out as 3H.
For KE, I'm using 1 over phi squared, and phi is very small.
Oh, I see. At this stage, you really need KE.
So I think there is something is a little bit inconsistent here, because in this derivation, you're ignoring the kinetic term, right? But on the one that you do, on the left-hand side, then you ignore the potential. You assume it's overdamped, basically. So
shall I write down the equation, the full equation again? Where is the equation?
In the interest of time, maybe we can
stop here.
Thank you, man.
Oh, thank you.